For the occasion, I'm here at a place that some people actually call the real center of the Czech Republic. Not the geographic center, to be sure, but certainly the focal point for much of the Czech Republic's rocky modern-day history. It's a statue of a man on a horse, which people call the horse when they arrange one of the hundreds of meetings that take place here each day. But it's, of course, the man on the horse that has overseen everything over the last 100 years, from the declaration of Czechoslovak independence to the various political demonstrations that gravitate here today. Above me is, of course, St. Václav, or Wenceslas, from which the surrounding square takes its name, and his likeness has adorned this place for at least 300 years in different incarnations. Legend has it that, when worse comes to worst for the Czech lands, he will come unpetrified and ride away to quash their enemies. A disconcerting prophecy when one considers the parades of Nazis and communists that the statue saw come and go. But even in that, there is a good point to be made. This symbol of Czech statehood is indomitable. The legacy of St. Václav rides on through the ages, now for about the 1076th year. And so who was this patron saint of the Czech Republic? We're very sure that St. Václav lived. We're rather sure that he was murdered at a fairly young age. And he certainly comes from an age when Christianity was taking hold amongst the pagan Slavs. But almost everything we know about Prince Václav, Duke Wenceslas I, good King Wenceslas, comes from legends. A millennium of legends.
There was a prince in Bohemia named Vratislav, and his wife was called Drahomíra. A son was born to them, and upon his baptism he was given the name Václav. Once he had grown a bit, his father the king summoned the bishop and a scribe and the men of the cloth. A mass was sung for him in the church of St. Maria, and then the bishop put the boy on the corner of the stair before the altar and blessed him. For this reason, we believe that the boy was protected by the mercy of God. His grandmother Ludmila had him taught in Slavic books under a priest, and he grasped their meaning well. Vratislav then sent him to Buděč Castle, where he began to learn Latin books and grasped them well as well. When Vratislav died, the Czechs put Prince Václav on the hereditary throne, but he was still young, and so his mother Drahomíra provided for the land and governed the people.
What can we know of Václav the man, if there ever was such a person? In this program, we'll be hearing the bits of legends that have survived antiquity, one building upon the next. And to weed out fact from fiction, we'll turn to Dr. Petr Sommer, director of the Center for Medieval Studies and an expert in ecclesiastical archaeology.
To je velmi těžký úkol z legend, především protože legendy jsou tím hlavním pramenem, který nám...
This is a very difficult task, drawing truth from legends, because it is primarily legends that tell us of the life of St. Václav. All one can really find is footprints of the truth. Legends are literary devices to be read by good Christians who want examples of how to live in order to achieve perfection. And so, of course, that is how the legends show Václav as a perfect Christian who lives as a hermit and a monk, who tears down the gallows and the jails, frees the prisoners and is altruistic. As a monarch, and he was evidently a very capable monarch because he stayed in power for 10 years at a very tough time, he wouldn't have survived for long if he had truly behaved that way.
Do roku 935 prostě dlouho nepřežil, kdyby se choval takovýmto způsobem.
With the grace of God, Prince Václav not only learned books, but was impeccable in his faith. He made benefactions unto the poor, he clothed the naked, fed the hungry, would not allow the widows to be maligned. He loved all people, rich and poor, assisted the servants of God, and adorned the churches with gold. Believing in God with all his heart, he did all the good deeds he could in his life. His seat was a comfortable and very modest palace, and from there he tried to moderate the provisions of the law to benefit the people. He was ready to show mercy in his every judgment and easily excuse the guilt of malefactors. He was a simple man whose pure morality stood out. He did not hesitate to promise estates to the upstanding, but he often gave precedence to the village poor who lived in squalor, and he won their favor. He was a parent to the orphaned and a tangible support to those in need of soothing and protection.
Oh, and he was also affable, humble, and strict on himself while tolerant of others, enlightening the ignorant and persuading the misled. Add to that modest and a great lover of patience, prudent and deliberate, and of course very, very generous, and other saints must be getting red in the face, at least were it not for those pesky truths of inescapable human weakness that defy even a legendary scouring.
Třeba v těch Václavských legendách autorům, protože psali ve staré době, v době, která nebyla příliš vzdálena.
The authors of these early legend of St. Václav could not resist characterizing the period with their own comparisons, images and recollections of events that they had either been told of or actually remembered. And thanks to this, we reach a credible basis for the legends. We learn that Václav had not a wife but a lover, and with her he had a son. This is something that has been discussed by religious authors since the Middle Ages, and it doesn't fit the image of an ideal saintly figure. We also learn very realistic details, such as that he would engage in wild drinking sessions with his troops. That could not be left like that, and so the legend adds that he awoke with bitter remorse and cursed himself for his actions. But if he was to be a good leader and commander, then it's easy to imagine that one of the ways he kept his coarse-grained troops on his side was by drinking with them. He could hardly have done otherwise.
Těch legend. No, tak zase druhý den pak litoval toho, co učinil, ale těžko to jako panovník mohl dělat jinak.
It cannot be good to hide the reliable stories we have learned from the gracious attention of lovers of truth, and so let it be told that the young Václav, with heavenly inspiration, on many occasions had visions of things to come, and often revealed them to his confidants. And so it was that once he opened his prophetic lips and told them, "As I lay in bed in the silence of the night, I had a grave and mysterious vision that portends the depth of my grandmother Ludmila, a saintly and admirable woman who will be the victim of a mad conspiracy of my mother, who is a pagan both by birth and shameful deed." And all of his words came to pass. Václav's mother gathered the cruelest men and asked, "What shall we do? He was meant to be a prince, but he has been corrupted by the priests and has become a monk." And she sent the hateful men to her mother-in-law to murder her. They did this, and her soul was sent in glorious martyrdom to the Lord. Then they robbed the priests and expelled them from the land. From that day on, the blessed Václav received many a threat, demanding that he quit his illusions of God, and they minded him. But he carried his books beneath his clothes and continued to learn the word of God, and quietly mourned their spiritual blindness. When he grew into a man, he gathered all the men and his mother and scorned their lack of faith and said, "Why did you keep me from learning the word of my God and from serving him alone? Hitherto I have been under your power, but from this moment I renounce my obedience and want to serve the Lord." And with that, he brought back the clerics and reopened the churches to great rejoicing. He banished his mother from the land, the Christian faith began to bloom, and the devil suffered a crushing blow.
According to legend, Václav welcomed back his mother, who wondered at the good deeds he had done, among them building the chapel of St. Vitus. This is the ambience there today on any normal day of the week. The Prague Castle courtyard humming with visitors, mostly foreign, taking in the glorious sight of the church and the legendry that is tied to it.
After Wenceslas had been reigning for some time and was very popular, his jealousy drove him mad and he actually ended up...
Indeed, one of Wenceslas's most enduring, real acts was the erection of this great Bohemian landmark, the defining feature of Prague Castle, the center of the Catholic faith in the Czech Republic, and the resting place of the saint himself. Kateřina Soukupová of the Prague Castle Administration met with me there.
The castle was founded by grandfather of St. Wenceslas, Czech Prince Bořivoj, about 880 as a fortified area, as a small village with wooden housing here. But the very first stone building at the castle was the first Christian church in Prague, the Church of Our Lady, standing in present second courtyard of the castle. Then the second church was St. George's, and the third church was St. Vitus Rotunda. Rotunda was a very small round church built right here, basically the same place as the cathedral is standing now, especially the chapel of St. Wenceslas.
So now we're standing at the back of the nave of the church. And so where exactly would the rotunda have been?
Rotunda was standing in that corner, the beginning of the Gothic part on the right. Now that is the actual chapel of St. Wenceslas. And right there, the first rotunda was standing. So we can see that place afterwards also. So rotunda was from 900s, about 930. Before 935, before the death of St. Wenceslas. So the rotunda was founded by St. Wenceslas, Prince Wenceslas in the time, because of the relic of St. Vitus. The first relic came in the time.
He brought an arm back, as I understand it. Is that
yes,
right?
It was part of his arm, and it came from Germany. It was basically a gift from German King, the Duke of Saxony, Henry, the gift to Prince Wenceslas to improve relations between Bohemia and Germany. So the first relic came in the 900s, and St. Wenceslas, he founded the first rotunda to keep the relic there. So rotunda became Bishop's Church, because bishopry was founded in 974, so it became the Church of Bishop, also the burial place of St. Wenceslas. This was the most important. This was the burial place of the main patron saint of St. Wenceslas, and later on also relics of St. Wojciech were placed in the rotunda in 1039. So rotunda became also the place where relics of Czech patrons were kept.
And some of the bones of St. Václav are still kept here today.
Right, right. The skull is in treasury. The pieces are kept in his chapel over there.
The pieces? What pieces?
Pieces of bones.
And which bones?
Hard to say, because only small pieces survived here, so it is more or less symbolical. The skull is well preserved, but other bones, only small pieces, you know, as the skull was well preserved.
And are we sure that they are indeed the bones of Wenceslas, of Václav?
We believe that, as they were discovered in his first burial place. So we believe it is that they are just pieces of St. Wenceslas' bones.
These bones, or rather the intact skull of the saintly king, is the subject of adoration come September 28th. Just as Wenceslas himself had once revered the deathly arm of St. Vitus, so the religious and the patriotic gather at the place of his death to see the remnant of his head. In the morning of that day, the Archbishop of Prague takes up the head, veiled and crowned and set upon the most regal of red pillows, still in dignified condition but for the loss of a few teeth, and travels to Stará Boleslav, where it is so solemnly paraded down the street. There is no reason to believe that Prince Wenceslas was anything less than a lovely fellow, nor is there any cause to doubt he was as saintly as they come. But then, as now, in fact, even more so than now, the decisions of the church are not without their worldly political motivations.
Tak byla to samozřejmě otázka více zájmu a ten politický zájem v tom byl velice silný.
The canonization of Prince Václav was, of course, the result of multiple interests, and the political interest was very strong. The budding Czech state of the 10th century could not be sufficiently independent without a sufficiently independent clerical organization. It had to be a Christian state that could hold its own against the major Western states that were suspicious of it. And a Christianized country needed examples in the form of saints, so the story of Václav was very useful for the period. It is a political matter, it is a religious matter, and it was a cultural issue. So it is an issue of the nascent Czech nation integrating itself into Central and Western Europe.
Českého národa, čili obyvatelstva nového českého státu 10. století a jeho, řekněme, připojení se ke střední a západní Evropě.
At the heart of this transformation from king to saint was a deed not at all uncommon to the ancient world, murder most foul.
Boleslav was then inveigled by the devil into hatred of his brother, and evil dogs held conference with him to discuss his brother Václav as the Jews once did about our Lord Jesus Christ. Václav came to the castle of Boleslav on a Sunday on the feast of Cosmas and Damian. When afterwards he prepared to leave for Prague, Boleslav detained him and said with ill intent, "Why do you leave, my brother? There is healthy drinking to be done." He would not deny his brother and so mounted his horse and played a game with his soldiers. When the night came, the evil dogs came to the court again. They called Boleslav to them and said, "As he goes to morning prayer, we ambush him." The bells rang early in the morning, and Václav, when he heard them, said, "Thanks to God that you let me live to see this morning." He went to Mass and met Boleslav at the gate. "Well, you tended to me, brother, yesterday evening." The devil then bent to the ear of his brother and had him answer, "I will tend to you even better now." With that, he struck him across the head with a sword. Václav turned to him and said, "What has taken you, brother?" Whereupon he grabbed Boleslav and threw him to the ground. Injured, he released his brother and ran to the church, and as he reached the handle, he was set upon by devils who beat him to death in the door. One of them, Hnievsa, leapt in and struck him with his sword in the side. Václav then let go of his ghost with the words, "I release my soul to you, my lord."
This is the actual chapel of Saint Wenceslas. This tomb is standing right here, and inside just pieces of bones are kept. Bones of Saint Wenceslas' relics.
It's absolutely stunningly decorated with every color imaginable and wonderful stonework.
Yes, there is a mosaic of precious stones around. Late 14th century. 1,400 pieces of stones, polished stones on the wall around here. Jaspers, amethyst, chrysoprases on the wall around here, plus some Gothic paintings around the scenes of Passion of Jesus Christ, above paintings of the beginning of the 16th century, scenes of life and death of Saint Wenceslas. Wenceslas murdered by his, it is said, by his younger brother, 28th September 935. He was murdered at the church door in Stara Boleslav, just near Prague. So after his death, Wenceslas' body remains moved here into the castle, buried in the first rotunda, and then they build a chapel for Saint Wenceslas. This is a scene of the murder, of the death of Saint Wenceslas on the right here, above the cornice. He's being killed by his brother, or by soldiers, knights of his brother, at the church door. You can see that.
Now, obviously, the highlight of this room is the tomb of Saint Václav, but this door is very famous.
This is a new one of 1900s. The original one is right here of the 14th century. And see the knocker? Should be the same Wenceslas was holding when he was being killed. It is only copy. or we can say it was inspired. Not that it is not exactly the same one, but it was similar like this. So this is Gothic doorway, but this is new of 1900s. But also above the chapel is also crown chamber with original crown jewels of Czech kings.
And the door has a number of keys.
This is this one.
That's this one.
Behind a special door, which is from 1800s, there's a staircase going up into the crown chamber, the room where original crown jewels are permanently kept, and originals are displayed only once in 5 years, for 1 week at the castle. A special door is here of 1860s with seven locks. There are seven keys owned by seven different people, representatives of our state and church. So every 5 years, all these people must be here together. They can open the door and to climb the steps into the crown chamber with crown jewels of Czech kings.
And do you remember off the top of your head which seven individuals have the keys?
President of the country, prime minister, then the president of the Senate and the president of the Chamber of Deputies or Parliament, mayor of Prague, also Prague Archbishop and a representative of the chapter of St. Vitus.
The martyred Václav lies in the glory befit the best of men, while his murderous brother rests in some unmarked, unknown place. In the end, though, it may have been Boleslav the Cruel, as he came to be known, who got the short end of the stick. Boleslav was not just a treacherous and conniving thug, if indeed he was a murderer at all. At least one historian posits that the murder may have in fact been an accident. The new king had taken firm control of government and had done it definitively, and he was able to take advantage of his usurped power. He was a capable monarch who managed great feats in his 35-some-odd years on the throne. He led a war against the neighboring Saxon king Otto I and didn't lose. He didn't win either, but it led to fruitful cooperation later with the Saxons that allowed him to spread his kingdom east. Czechs at that time were divided into various regional princedoms that Boleslav was able to homogenize. He was building a state that would last for 1,000 years.
Budování toho státu bylo provozováno samozřejmě násilím, to scelování neproběhlo nějakými mírovými.
The building of this state was done, of course, by violence. It wasn't unification through peace treaties or political agreements. It was hard-handed and bloody, first in the historical area of Bohemia, and then he struck abroad, beyond Krakow, into Red Ruthenia and probably into northern Hungary. Basically, he fought out a huge conglomerated state. By maintaining a constant state of war, he kept his troops constantly paid with plunder. These outlying states were very fragile, and they peeled off whenever there was trouble in the center. But it was not for nothing. The success was the creation of a heartland that lasted throughout the Middle Ages and essentially until today. It created a unified Czech state.
Středověk a vlastně novověk až dodnes, to nemůžeme říct, že bylo k ničemu. Prostě vznikl sjednocený český stát.
Really then, looking at the Czech Republic of today, with all things considered, who has made the greater impact? Brutal Boleslav or his blessed brother? How important really is St. Václav to the greater Czech picture? Dr. Petr Sommer again.
Ten český stát dobudoval právě ten, kdo ho zavraždil, totiž ten jeho bratr, ten Boleslav I. Takže když už by...
The Czech state was completed by the one who murdered him, his brother Boleslav. So, if we are to consider who had the major influence on the beginnings of Central Europe, well, then it would probably be Boleslav with his political and power plays rather than Wenceslas. But then it was Wenceslas in his second life as a saint who outdid Boleslav by far and wide, by embodying the Czech state, becoming not just a symbol but a holy protector. Sometimes this was misused, sometimes it was used purely and legitimately, as tends to be the case with historic symbols. But if we compare the importance of Wenceslas and Boleslav to the Czech state, they don't compete. Each is important at a different level.
Významu pro český stát nesetkávají, pohybují se každý v jiné rovině.
So ends this Radio Prague broadcast, marking the feast day of patron saint Wenceslaus. You can hear the program again or recommend it to others at our website, radio.cz. If you'd like to contact us, we are always glad to receive your questions and comments. Just write to us at english@radio.cz, on Facebook or Twitter under Radio Prague, or of course by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099 Prague. From me, Christian Falvey, and all of us here at Radio Prague, goodbye. Thank you.